I hate moral victories, but with what we're facing right now, with the group we have, with the injuries, I'm proud of our guys for competing.
Blackhawks Live.
When the Blackhawks play these top teams, it feels like their focus is so heightened that they play better.
Charlie Remeliotis.
I think the difference, obviously, is the Blackhawks don't really have the talent. They're going to have to outwork a lot of teams and try to play tight defensive hockey.
That Dickinson, Anderson, Foligno line, it is clicking.
That's cool. It's freaking awesome.
Now, it's time to talk Hawks.
Let's go Blackhawks.
Here's Joe Brand.
Come on, sucker. Let's get it on.
Fabulous work by the one and only Ernie Skatton once again. And yes, Charlie Remeliotis will be joining us after the 7:30 news here on 720 WGN. I'm Joe Brand. This is Blackhawks Live. Our producer is Jack Heinrich. And the Hawks are currently in the midst of a four-game losing skid. Yeah, it's a little rough right now, but what gives? What was with the different performance against the Vancouver Canucks yesterday at the United Center, where they outplayed one of the better teams in the NHL, definitely in the first period, probably in the third period, not so much in the second period, but it was a all-out performance by this Blackhawks team that is missing a handful of pieces. And I think that that plays a role in why they were able to, number one, get off to a good start and kind of keep that consistent play. Because why are the Hawks struggling with that so much this year? Why is consistency such a problem? And how come when you're missing Seth Jones, Kevin Korchinski, Alex Vlasic, Mackenzie Entwistle, Taylor Hall, Andreas Athanasiou, you're able to put up a great performance against a really good Vancouver team? As Charlie mentioned in the open that Ernie put together, the Hawks do a better job most of the time when they play better teams. We've seen it on this recent four-game losing skid. They had a pretty decent performance against the Edmonton Oilers when you take into account all the players that they were missing. And you thought that that could roll into the next game against the Seattle Kraken, but that did not happen whatsoever. That might be the most critical loss of the year. But we're kind of past that now because of what the Hawks were able to do against Vancouver. They were able to utilize a vibrant United Center crowd, get off to a good start, make it a very close game, and nearly come away with the point had Connor Bedard gotten that tripping call that in real time it looked like he was pretty confident that a call should have been made. Later on, he said the right things in the Blackhawks dressing room, as the 18-year-old just continues to do and say the right things. But the Hawks nearly got at least a point out of that game. Again, I think it's a couple of different things. When you miss so many players, I think it's a little easier to get back to the fundamentals and get back to the well-structured hockey that this team, for whatever reason, can't make it consistently. But you're talking about a really young six defensemen that the Hawks were relying on yesterday. Because now Alex Vlasic is out of the picture, at least for the short term. It sounds like the Hawks are just being cautious with him. I mean, we've said multiple times on these airwaves that he has been the most consistent defenseman for the Hawks this year. So now they lose him after a game and a half. And you're relying on a lot of young guys. The Hawks had to go with five forwards on the power play, or at least the top power play unit. And it looked kind of good. Troy Murray was mentioning how different it is with five forwards. The Hawks did this a little bit last year, but I think that was more to just try and crack the code of this of a struggling power play. It wasn't so much because of the pieces the Hawks were dealing with. But Troy's point was, when you go heavy offense on the power play, you're a little bit vulnerable in a shorthanded situation. But it looked okay. I mean, it looked like, And this is something we've brought up too. I do feel like the power play has been improving a little bit. And maybe not every single power play is better than the last over the past couple of games, but there seems to be just a little bit better entries, a little bit better decision-making on the passes, on the shot selection. And when you get those five skilled forwards, when you get Philip Kurashev with Connor Bedard and throw in Taylor Radish there and Nick Foligno, they're maybe on the same page a little bit more. And I know that's easier to say right now after the fact, you know, kind of Monday morning quarterbacking. Don't worry, we won't get too much into the Bears today. But that's a good sign. And again, anytime this team has a positive, how little it is, how happenstance it is, you got to pull from it. You got to hopefully use it for momentum into the next game, because so many times are we critical about this team. So many times are we breaking down things that just aren't working. And going back to the previous road trip where the Hawks did lose three in a row, kind of got whooped in Detroit, Winnipeg, and Minnesota, Luke Richardson was positive about the last 20 minutes in that last road game of the road trip. Even though the Hawks were down by four goals, able to pull out some positive from that and move forward, and they ended up going on a three-game point streak. Now, it's still going to take a lot for that to continue, that trend, which the Hawks host Colorado tomorrow night. That's a real tough opponent. And let's face it, the Hawks are in no position to take a look at opponents and be like, oh, that's a winnable game, because it's just not the situation right now. But they still continue to have a little bit better of a performance against the better teams. And I don't know if that's an adrenaline rush. I don't know if that's just playing to your competition, but it was nice to see. I think that was one of the more fun games at the United Center all year long. Crowd was into it. Hawks were looking much better on the penalty kill. The crowd was getting into it because they were looking better on the penalty kill, creating a lot of chances, really limiting Vancouver. Now, you can maybe chalk that up to Vancouver playing the day before in Minnesota, coming off a shootout loss, having to travel over to Chicago, and maybe not getting off on the right foot. But the Hawks limited Vancouver to zero shots on goal in 5-on-5 in the first period in yesterday's game. That's not all just happenstance. That's good, hard-working effort by this team. Now, it was a different story in the second period, but that's going to happen from Vancouver, who's number one in the league in terms of scoring, the best goal differential in the NHL. And they just shoot the puck a lot. They got a lot of different goal scorers, and Sam Lafferty's there now, and you all know how I feel about him. But just continues to win those hard-working battles, win those little 50-50 pucks, and sustain offensive pressure. That's why Vancouver's gotten off to such a good start. Not just Sam Lafferty, but just playing that full team game. Rick Tocchet really seems to know what he's got with that squad. And ironically, last year, it was a win against the Hawks. That was Rick Tocchet's debut as the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Remember all that drama with Bruce Boudreau and the entire crowd chanting, Bruce, there it is, and didn't want to see him leave. I'm sure they're pretty happy nowadays with the start that they've gotten off to. But some people might think that they're still a bit of a pretender. I think the rest of the regular season will clear the air on that a little bit more. But again, the hopeful thing is that the Hawks can put up that same type of effort, that same type of performance against Colorado tomorrow. Once again, tall task. Last time the Hawks faced Colorado, it was rough. You could totally see the difference in the two teams' rosters. And we've seen that a lot this year. And again, with missing so many guys, Vlasic, Korchinski, Seth Jones. Over on the offense, where guys like Taylor Hall and Anthony Seau haven't been here in what seems like forever. Sounds like Colin Blackwell might be on his way back. That helps a little. Mainly, I hope he can get back on the ice in a game sooner rather than later, because he's just one of the better down-to-earth guys and has really gone through a rough time as of late and just is doing absolutely everything he can to stay positive. So you'd really like to see a guy get rewarded in that type of situation. But I still wonder how different this offense would look if Lucas Reichel were to click. And now, you know, Joey Anderson left mid-game yesterday. And you couldn't mess up that line. Foligno, Dickinson, and Joey Anderson were just doing too much good stuff to mix up that line. Because the one, and I don't want to play head coach, I'm not qualified to do that, but the one line I would be curious about, because they put Reichel and Bedard up with Kurashev, it's probably more they bring up Reichel with Bedard and Kurashev, but if you're going to team up Reichel and Bedard, What about throwing Nick Foligno up there as well? Because then you got the hardworking guy that can win the pucks and feed Bedard and Reichel, and then you've got probably the two most offensively skilled guys. I don't know, maybe because of this year, you might argue that that's Filip Kurashev more than Reichel. But what if you had those two offensively skilled guys with Nick Foligno? I'd be interested in seeing that. I'd also be interested in seeing Jason Dickinson getting moved up. But I know that creates some questioning because then you've got Dickinson and Bedard on the same line, and you want both those guys to take faceoffs. I would like to see Jason Dickinson on the power play, but again, we've been seeing some improvements for the power play. And I mean, think about it. These are the types of questions and decisions that Luke Richardson has to go with and go through each and every day. But I do appreciate how he rewards Lucas Reichel as much as he challenges him. As rough of a start as it's been for Lucas Reichel, as much as it seemed like he's really not hitting his confidence there, Luke Richardson gives him a lot of opportunities to get it back. And let's just pose this hypothetical really quick. What if it's not completely linear? What if it's not Lucas Reichel just figures it out and then everything takes off for him? And then the entire Hawks offense. It might be one of those things where it's going to be a little give and take, a little one step forward, two steps back. And is that what you want to see? No. Is that encouraging to see? No. But maybe that is what has to happen for Lucas Reichel to finally figure things out at some point this year. And I know you're all sick of me talking about what patience is needed for Arvid Soderblom, but maybe that's the same kind of situation for Lucas Reichel. Because the Hawks are in this situation right now, year two of a rebuild, you don't necessarily need to figure out everything right now to start winning games, because wins and losses don't matter too much right now. I know it's a lot easier to build team camaraderie, and it's a lot easier on the fans, but that is just the reality of a rebuild. I'm really interested in asking Charlie Remiliotis a few of these questions. He's also got a Hawks cast coming up on NBC Sports Chicago. If you don't know what that is, stick around. We'll have him break that down a little bit. And we'll get into a few more things, too. What a move. What a play. What a gesture by the Hawks to send the entire team to Kevin Korchinski's father's funeral. Larry Korchinski tragically passed away. That's why Kevin Korchinski's been away from the team. His services were Friday after the game in Seattle on Thursday. The entire team went to Saskatoon, attended the funeral. And frankly, I think that played a role in Sunday's performance too. We'll get to that in a little bit. Blackhawks Live, 720 WGN. When you ask Jack Heinrich to do something, he'll do it. Last week I asked for Christmas bumps. What do we get? Who is this?
The Crystals?
Okay. Yeah, I knew it was old school.
I just saw the title and picked it.
I've got a Christmas playlist. I don't mean to compete with Steve Godsell of our sales department, who's got a uncommon Christmas playlist on Spotify. I feel the need to check it out. It's pretty good, but I've got my own, too. I mashed together a Christmas playlist along with just some other kind of party songs, but I'll have to add that one. So thank you for the song, Jack. Our producer is Jack Heinrich. I'm Joe Brand. Charlie Remiliotis is going to join us after the 7:30 news here on Blackhawks Live. Kevin Korchinski's been away from the team for a little bit now, and until this past weekend, we weren't sure why. And unfortunately, the reason is he lost his father. Kevin Korchinski is 19 years old. He lost his father. The services were on Friday in Saskatoon. The team had a road trip in Edmonton last Tuesday, Seattle last Thursday. They spent the night in Seattle. They woke up Friday. They flew to Saskatoon and then flew back home. So the entire team was there to support Kevin Korchinski. Here's what Nick Foligno had to say about it.
When a brother hurts, we all hurt. And, we'll be playing hard for him tomorrow for sure.
What helped you the most when you had to go through your mom's situation?
Being with the guys. That's the hardest part, right? Is like you grieve And the only normalcy you really have is when you come in the room, right? And you're putting your skates on. Everything else outside the rink when that happens is not normal, right? You're not, you go home after a game, you used to call on your mom or your dad, and you can't anymore, right? So those are the hard moments. And when you're at the rink, it's kind of where everything kind of falls back into place. So being here really helped me, and being around the guys and, you know, having that camaraderie, having that brotherhood. And sometimes you realize how lucky you are to have that when you're going through such a hard time, especially as a young player or a young person. So you get picked up off the floor a lot of times by your teammates and guys that really care about you, and obviously your family, but they give you the strength to kind of keep moving forward. So I was very lucky to have that, and I have an incredible family, you know. We saw that in the love that we saw in that church yesterday with all of Kevin's family. We know he's well looked after in a lot of ways too, with the way the community surrounded his family. So you know, we're going to help him get through this, and it doesn't make it any easier. And like I said, there's no right words, but being present and just showing him that he's cared about is most important.
That's Blackhawks forward Nick Foligno. Nick Foligno lost his mother Janice when he was 21 years old and fresh into the league of the NHL back in 2009. Not only is Nick Foligno a great leader, just a typical role model and brought into this Hawks dressing room for so many different reasons, but my goodness, is he a good reference for this type of situation. And I know that clip that we just played, I put it on my Twitter after it happened, after the Hawks practice. It was so well received on Twitter. I mean, it's not too often you get something 100% positive on Twitter these days, but rightly so for this situation. And it just seems like the perfect mindset for it, because no, hockey, sports aren't the most important thing in the world. But when they can be an escape, when they can help you kind of relieve the stress, the pressure from what is going on in real life, that's how you turn it into a positive. You don't use it to totally block out what's going on in your world, but you use it, as Troy Murray puts, as his happy place. And he's right. It's not like your mom and dad are there with you for every game, no matter what sport. And yeah, they might be there to support you, but they're not on the field. They're not on the ice. They're not on the court out there with you. And I feel like Kevin Korchinski can lean on Nick Foligno a lot during what he's going through, which only some of us can fathom how difficult that is. Charlie Remeliotis joins us after the 7:30 news, and Steve Ruxton has it from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's the most wonderful time of the year by Andy something. Andy Williams. Thank you, Jack. It is the most wonderful time of the year and of the show. It's time for our guest. This is Blackhawks Live. You're listening to 720 WGN, and Charlie Remeliotis of NBC Sports Chicago joins us on Blackhawks Live. Charlie, what's up, man? How are you?
What's up? What an intro leading me into that song. That's beautiful.
We had a big board, and we had all these different songs, and it took us about an hour before the show to prep to figure out which one would describe you best, and that's the one we decided on. So thank you for validating our whole process with that.
That's unbelievable, the fact that you guys were thinking about me for that long. I think that's an hour way too long than you should have.
Yeah, it's almost as long as the entire show that we have here. So let's get right to it. Charlie, what were you most impressed with the Blackhawks' performance yesterday against Vancouver?
Yeah, I thought that was probably one of their best starts of the season. I mean, at one point they were out shooting Vancouver 12-1, and that was well into the first period. It was about like 8 minutes left. So I thought that was like great start. It was against a Vancouver team that's really good this year. And I know they were on the second of a back-to-back, and I think they played they went to a shootout against Minnesota the night prior. So when you're playing in back-to-back road games, I think that's when you want to capitalize. And the Blackhawks did that. And I thought they had a good third period too. It was really the second period that giving up those three goals, and then I think it was like 2:45 or 41 seconds, somewhere in there. So I think you could build off the start. And then I thought the five forward power play look was awesome. And I had to double check this, but it was the first time all year the Hawks they scored two power play goals in a game.
Wow.
And so I think, there have been times where I think the Blackhawks have like barely scored. Like it was like a second or two after a power play expired. So it could be a little bit deceiving, but I thought the power play looked really solid, and it was smart to go to the five forward look when three of their power play quarterbacks are out right now.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point to bring up, because I think even just the special teams altogether looked better in that game yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Dickinson and Joey Anderson, just individual efforts burning off time in the PK, and that's what you like to see, those simple little things. Why is this team so inconsistent with that, though? I mean, why are they able to put up a great performance like that against Vancouver but not against Seattle?
It's a good question. I think what it comes down to is when there's a good team coming to town, like when the Hawks are facing Edmonton, and like Edmonton was, they were on a 7-game winning streak. They're feeling themselves, and the Blackhawks were without Seth Jones. They're without all these guys, and it feels like when they play the good teams, their focus is so heightened, because if they're not on their A game, they could get blown out. Quite frankly, because they just don't have the talent to match up with some of these top teams. And when some of the lower tier teams come into town, not saying that the Blackhawks don't take them seriously, but it's less likely that they'll lose a game 8-1. And ironically, those are the games that they have lost 7-1 or 8-1, because it was Arizona earlier in the year, it was Columbus earlier in the year, and then it was obviously Seattle. So it's very weird psychologically. I would love to, I think that's my assessment from an armchair psychologist point of view. Like, I just think when the top tier teams come into town, or they're facing a top team, it's like, you better be on your A game, because if not, like, it could get out of hand very quickly.
I feel like most psychologists sit in an armchair, so it would still work. It would still work for you, Charlie. You mentioned the five forwards on the power play. Obviously, that's just a temporary thing. But is it also just with so many guys that they're missing right now, going back to simplistic hockey? I mean, is that playing a role in that? Because everyone understands we're missing so many role guys like Korchinski, Seth Jones, not just on the power play, but with their overall game. Is it easier to play simple hockey when you're missing some of those important pieces?
Maybe, or I think it could have something to do with the fact that when you know there's five forwards out there, it's kind of like maybe everyone gets a little bit of extra jump in their step, because yeah, it's like they have set positions, but it's kind of like, hey, let's just pretend like it's a 5-on-5, and let's all just kind of rotate around. And it gets to a point where when there's no Seth Jones, there's no Korchinski, there's no Alex Vlasic, then it's like, I think Nikita Zaitsev was the power play right quarterback on the second unit. And it's like, at that point, I would much rather have Philip Kurashev just running the point, as opposed to just putting a guy where he's never really played before in a role that he's not used to. So I think that's maybe the thinking more than anything else.
We're talking with Charlie Romeliotis here on Blackhawks Live. Charlie, the goaltending situation has kind of been a hot topic. Would you do anything differently than what the Hawks are doing with Arvid Soderblom right now?
I don't think so. I think sending him back to Rockford is, I just don't think he's going to learn anything else down there. And I think I would only send him down there if I felt like his confidence was taking a hit. And I just don't see it. Like, he's still, you know, we're in the room all the time. Like, he doesn't seem like a guy that's like down on himself,
yes,
or he's like mopey around. Like, he's just, even when I talk to him on and off the record, he just seems like he's confident in the process and that the results will come. And I don't know if I'm on an island on this, but I still feel like he's going to be a starting goalie in this league. And it is so hard when the team is not great in front of you to try to steal games. And the Blackhawks, I did a piece on this a couple weeks ago, and it's like, in his first like 28 appearances with the Blackhawks, the Hawks have averaged like barely over 2 goals per game. It was like 2.04.
Yes.
And like, for reference, I think last year, like, the worst team in the league had like a 2.33 goals per game. So it is like significantly worse than the worst team in the league last year on an offensive standpoint. So it's like, sure, could he clean up his rebounds? Yeah. But like, the Hawks are a team that they're going to give up so many chances, many of which are going to be high-quality chances, that at some point, I mean, he's just going to give up 3 to 4 goals per game naturally because he's going to face like 40 shots a game and like 15 or 20 of those will be high-quality chances. And so, I don't know. I don't know if I'm like rambling here, but it just feels like it's really hard to have a good save percentage on a bad team, especially as a young goaltender. And once the infrastructure around him starts to strengthen, I feel like you're going to see a lot. One, you're going to see more wins, but you're going to see his save percentage and his goals against average strengthen because of it. So I'm not really losing confidence in him at all.
No, you're not rambling because you're bringing up valid points. And I think it's his time here with the Hawks, too. He's never been supported with a solid roster. So it is really hard to diagnose what his game has been like since joining the Hawks. The only other thing is I wonder if Peter Mrazek wasn't having such a fantastic year, if people would be a little less antsy for answers on Arvid Soderblom. But I think the other situation is down in Rockford, Jackson Stauber's numbers aren't great, and Drew Commesso is probably just not in the right position to be called up to the NHL right now. So why wouldn't you take advantage of this time right now and see what you've got in Arvid Soderblom?
Mm-hmm, for sure. I talked to Peter Mrazek a couple weeks ago, too, about this, and I was like, hey, when you were a young goalie and you were going through a tough stretch and maybe you weren't getting wins, how did you stay confident in your game? Like, were you more committed to the process or did you need to see the results to feel the confidence? And he's like, I got to be honest with you. I broke into the league on a really good Detroit team, so I didn't really have a ton of downs. So, like, Arvid is in a really tough situation where he breaks into the NHL as a full-time goaltender on a team that's dead last in the NHL, right, and they're just in the middle of a rebuild. So it's like, his numbers are just not going to look great because I don't think you could put really any goaltender in the position. I think with Mrazek, he's a veteran and he's been around, so it's easy for him to have a 40 save shutout or whatever and steal performances here and there because he's just been around the league. Arvid will get there. It's just like his first full NHL season, and so he has to kind of navigate the ups and downs. But yeah, and then last thing I'll say is I remember talking to Peter Aubrey, the Rockford Ice Hogs goaltending coach at the time. I think it was last year, and I was asking him both about Soderblom and Drew Commesso, and he's like, I haven't seen Drew a ton yet because he was still in college, but he's like, if Drew can get to where Arvid is right now, he's like, we would be thrilled. So it said more about like where Peter felt Arvid was versus where Drew wasn't. And like he felt like he was very comfortable with where Arvid was at and was very confident in what his ceiling could be in the NHL.
Huh. And no, that's a good point about Mrazek because Mrazek's on this run right now and he has something to kind of base it off of. He has this experience already in the NHL. Soderblom really doesn't have that. I mean, he's just getting consistent playing time this year, so he's got nothing to base it off of other than, you know, when he was kind of just thrown into the NHL landscape a couple of years ago. Kind of similar topic, but also different, but what's your latest assessment on Lucas Reichel?
Yeah, it feels like they've tried everything. And at the beginning of the year, they started him at center, and then we were all banging the drum that he should be moved to the wing, and then he was moved to the wing, and then we were all banging the drum that he should be on Bedard's line, and then he was put on Bedard's line, and then it was like banging the drum that he should be on the first power play unit, and then he gets put on the first power play unit. It just feels like nothing is working for some reason. I think we're at a point where he's probably like in a very in a little bit of a mentally fragile place right now. And I think Luke had mentioned that last week or so, just saying like, I think he's really down on himself. So I think rather than piling on like, hey, we need more from you, like pick it up, I think the Blackhawks kind of have to like walk him through how he might be able to get out of this rut. And rather than giving him some tough love, I think they have to try to like walk him through it. And then, you know, hopefully for his sake, he has a little bit of an offensive burst and that builds some confidence. And then the Blackhawks are able to give him a little bit more feedback that might strike him as opposed to like having like a fragile confidence. you don't want the criticism. He'll take it the wrong way. So it's a very delicate situation because I think Lucas, we saw what his potential could be last year, and I think they're just trying anything and everything to get him going, and it doesn't seem like anything is working right now, which is really weird.
Charlie, I know these off days are pretty coveted, especially now where the Hawks seem to have a game every other day at least. So we appreciate you taking time here tonight. You got another Hawks cast coming up tomorrow. Do you want to tell the fans a little bit more about that if they weren't able to catch the first one?
Yeah, so I had a fun time on the first one with Tony Granato, and he unfortunately won't be able to be on Tuesday's broadcast as he's in a little bit of a battle with him for himself. So we're thinking of Tony, but I'm looking forward. Brian Bickle is coming in, and he'll be in studio with me. And so we're going to have a couple fun guests that I don't know if I can share yet, but tomorrow morning.
Oh, come on. You said you'd be able to share them right here on the air.
I did.
No.
I'm kidding, but they will be fun guests. I will say there a couple former Hawks will be joining us. So it'll be fun. A couple of Brian's former teammates. I'll drop a couple of those hints there, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's basically like we're ISO camming. It's hard to, I recommend if you have a second TV or you can pull up something on your laptop to have it up there so you can watch the main feed on the broadcast, because it's more of like a second screen opportunity to kind of like what you can watch the real action. And then on the side, you're like, oh, we're ISOing Connor Bedard. So, hope you guys join us or whoever is able to watch, but it'll be a fun time.
Yeah, you could also use your computer to stream the game, listen to it live on the radio, and then also pay attention. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah,
it sounds like a lot of fun. I know the first one you enjoyed a lot too, so that's cool. Brian Bickle's a fun dude. Have a ton of fun with that, and I'll see you tomorrow. Another big day tomorrow.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Likewise. That is Charlie Remeliotis. He is on NBC Sports Chicago. He's doing the new Hawks cast. There will be another one tomorrow as the Hawks host Colorado, which, of course, you can catch right here on 720 WGN. One last break, and then we get Jack's last thoughts here on Blackhawks Live 720 WGN.
Jingle bell, jingle bell.
Jingle bell rock. I don't know the artist, though. I don't need to know. That's okay.
Appreciate Bobby Helms.
Say it again, Steve Ruxton.
Bobby Helms, H-E-L-M-S.
Correct.
All right.
I used to play it all the time on country radio.
Oh, boy. Take us back to that time, Steve Ruxton.
I don't think you want to.
Steve Ruxton will have your news coming up at the top of the hour. After that, it's John Landecker. I'm Joe Brand. This is the last segment of Blackhawks Live. We've got Jack Heinrich behind the glass. He's our producer, and it's time for Jack's last thoughts. Go ahead, Jack.
Thank you, Joe. You touched on it a little bit earlier. Joey Anderson hurt in the last game, so another Blackhawk down. I think me and you might have to lace him up soon. The way this is going,
don't want that.
It's definitely not.
Can you skate?
No, I skated once in first grade at a friend's birthday party, and that's it.
So, you're not going for a second time.
Not out there.
I can't skate well at all. I've skated probably more in my life in the past 5 years than I have the entire time before that, but no. It's very ugly when I get out there.
Yeah, I'd probably hurt myself somehow. But, I mean, it's kind of crazy. It just seems like one after another, someone's getting hurt, and this team has already battled a lot, and, I mean, the expectations weren't super high, but you thought they'd be a little more competitive, a little more talent on the roster after what they did last year, but one way or another, a lot of guys have either gotten hurt or not with the team anymore, and it's not even the trade deadline. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit, and I understand the fans' frustration, but it's a lot of young guys getting some valuable time, and that's really what you're looking for in a rebuild is you're watching all these young guys like Bedard and Kurashev and Reichel and Soderblom and all to see if they're going to be a piece for the future. And unfortunately, that's kind of where you got to shift it more to sort of the win-loss result.
The Hawks were lucky they didn't lose Connor Murphy in yesterday's game, too. He took a shot off the knee and he left, and it looked like he'd be gone, but he did come back. Takes a lot to knock Connor Murphy out of a game, but yeah, you felt for him. Do you happen to see this tweet about a connection with Chris Farley and the Blackhawks?
I just saw that on Twitter.
Apparently, Chris Farley grew up on the same block as Hawks defensive coach Kevin Dean, and we know Chris Farley's connection with Chicago and Second City, and later on that tweet, there was a video of Chris Farley like dancing on the ice at the United Center and, you know, being his crazy, obnoxious self, but the one we all love. And I just couldn't believe that. And we talked to Kevin Dean last year. Man, I want to talk to him again now. I want to know if there's any more of a connection with him. Dan Maraza on Twitter, two R's, two Z's, three A's, saying, "The great Chris Farley passed away 26 years ago today. He has a fun connection to the NHL. Not only did Farley play hockey growing up, but a kid on his block in Madison, Wisconsin, went on to play in the NHL. Kevin Dean, who is now an assistant coach for the Blackhawks, he also played for the Hawks, too." I don't know if it quite tops Steve Bertrand's connection with Chris Farley that we often hear about, organizing one of his buddies' bachelor parties and hooked it up with a Second City performance that featured Chris Farley because they all went to Marquette. One other thing on the national stage, rough that Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't get to play in the game for Minnesota against Pittsburgh Penguins.
It's part of the schedule, I guess they said. But
yeah, I mean, Minnesota's on a three-game winning streak. They've won seven of their last nine. Philip Gustafson's on a three-game winning streak of his own, and he's only allowed three goals in his last three games, .969 save percentage. So you get it, but come on, John.
Yeah,
Hines.
I think in the first... I saw on Twitter, because I think that game started at 6 our time, but they were chanting in Pittsburgh, "We want Fleury," in the first period. So
how could you not? I mean, again, a guy that no matter where he goes, instantly becomes a fan favorite. Could be his last time in Pittsburgh. But yeah, that's a shame. You get it. I mean, if Minnesota goes to the playoffs, then okay, good on you, John Hines.
Trying to win a game.
Yeah. That's Jack Heinrich. I'm Joe Brand. Another big thanks to Charlie Romeliotis for jumping on as well. This has been Blackhawks Live. Hawks will host Colorado tomorrow night, 7:30. Puck drop, 7 o'clock pregame show right here on 720 WGN.